Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Monday night installment here at Your Remedy Is in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various offensive litigating strategies. And this is with our speaker, Mr. David Merlin. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedy Is in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer.
Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedy Is in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedy Is in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com, if we look in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes all of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known purely for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced, the jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedy Is in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of YourRemedyIsInTheLaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy Is in the Law. And Your Remedy Is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that altogether make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at YourRemedyIsInTheLaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you'll get to a point where it will ask you, what are your hot points? What are you interested in? This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights. Anything that you can think of that if it affects your personal rights in one way or another, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of how you think of a network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, and maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be a tremendous amount of help to you. And maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do where I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the further you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to a point where you've educated to yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're on the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, maybe you're just new to your remedies in the law and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. Every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. And we make those introductions. Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen. And when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. Again, we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have had to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if your remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you call the remedy and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right. Lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, thank you so very much, Martin. I appreciate you taking that time to give us that wonderful disclaimer. Ladies and gentlemen, this is going to be a different night tonight. It's going to be different in the sense that GW had a conflict and is not going to be speaking with you tonight. It will be me. I will be speaking with you. And I was trying to think about something to pull different out of the hat other than what you've heard over and over and over and over and over again. So tonight I'm going to share with you a work in progress. It's something that I came up with. I've just shared it with John, who will not be on tomorrow night's call because he's in California on a family emergency. He'll be back Wednesday on deck. But I shared it with him via email this afternoon when I finished up with it. And we're going to see what he thinks about it following a week from tomorrow, and how it can affect or may affect any case that you have in the future, which is deemed a malum prohibita case. Do you know what malum prohibita means? It means that there's two kinds of laws in this country. One set of laws underneath the banner of malum prohibita, the other set of laws underneath the banner of malum in se. Malum in se laws are basically violating God's laws, lying, cheating, stealing, murder, things like that. Malum prohibita is you are breaking a law that we made just because we said so, and you can't do it just because we said so. Now, we know that as free men and women, as American nationals, if you would, that we can do anything we want to do, anything we want to do, so long as it doesn't injure another's property. And that includes their own body, their own flesh and blood. You can't injure somebody else. And that's it. You can't injure property. And that's all there is to what the law is as far as malum in se. But malum prohibita is something totally different. It's you can't do it because we said so. You can't have, you can't smoke marijuana or crack cocaine or whatever it is that you want to do to your body. You can't do it. You can't hire a woman to pleasure you. You can't. A woman can't hire a man to pleasure him. None of that stuff. That's malum prohibita. You just can't do it because why? We said so. So I've been working in thought for the last couple of weeks and then decided to put it down on paper today. A judicial notice jurisdiction challenge. That is something that once it's been approved, modified, corrected by John and the team, we'll go ahead and include that in GW's packet. And the reason why we're going to include it is that you can show it to a law enforcement officer on the side of the road, letting him know where you're going with this, And at the same time, it can be used as the very first filing, even before your hearing your first hearing of pleading, whether you're innocent, guilty, or no contest. So I read it out to you right now, and I'll cover it slowly, and then after this has been read to you, we'll open it up for Q&A. I hope you all like this. So you have to begin with a court style. For those of you that aren't familiar with that term, any legal documents that you look at, you'll always see at the very top center of the header on the first page where it will say, you know, in the Supreme Court of XYZ, County of ABC, et cetera, like that. And then on the left-hand side, who's the plaintiff, who's the defendant. On the right-hand side, you've got the court date, court case number, the judge listed there oftentimes, and then what the pleading is about on itself, the title of the pleading. Then underneath that centered is repeating the title of the pleading. In this case, it's notice, jurisdiction challenge. And it begins, comes now my full name, hereinafter known as defendant in error, and files this defendant in error judicial notice challenging the jurisdiction of this court in the aforementioned matter. Paragraph 1, defendant in error's incontrovertible evidence. See Exhibit A, affidavit in support of defendant in error's political citizenship status. Now, for those of you that are on the call, and I see the several here that have already gone through the process of correcting your status, you recognize that term because that's on your affidavit that we supply you. So that's the first subject line. Then it goes into background, and I'm going to read this to you now. James Madison gave the American people the first heads up with regards to jurisdiction when he said in Federalist Paper number 39, in addressing matters of Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, and I quote, its jurisdiction extends to certain enumerated objects only and leaves to the several states a residuary and inviolable sovereignty over all other subjects, dated January 26, 1788. Next paragraph. This was followed up with U.S. v. Cruikshank, 92 U.S. 542, open bracket, 1875, close bracket. That's the year. A little over 100 years later, when Cruikshank summed up Houston v. Moore, 18 U.S. 1, 33, that's 1820, the year, and Moore versus Illinois, 55 U.S., 13, 20. This was an 1852 decision in the interim. Quote, we have in our political system a government of the United States and a government of each of the several states. Each one of these governments is distinct from the others, and each has the citizens of its own who owe its allegiance and whose rights within its jurisdiction it must protect. The same person may be at the same time a citizen of the United States and a citizen of a state, but his rights of citizenship under one of these governments will be different from those he has under the other. Continuing, when one delves further into Cruikshank, we learn, quote, it is the natural consequence of a citizenship which owes allegiance to two sovereignties and claims protections from both. He owes allegiance to the two departments, so to speak, within their respective spheres. One must pay the penalties which each exacts for disobedience to its laws. In return, he can demand protection from each within its own jurisdiction, end quote. Continuing, in 1901, Justice John Marshall Harlan of the Supreme Court of the United States predicted much of what has occurred through this day in all our courts when he said, quote, the idea prevails with some, indeed it has found expression in arguments at the bar, that we have in this country substantially two national governments, one to be maintained under the Constitution with all of the restrictions, the other to be maintained by the Congress outside and independently of that instrument by exercising such powers as other nations of the earth are accustomed to. Continuing, I am unable to think of any other single quote more chilling from any jurist that rattled me more than this aforementioned part of Justice John Marshall Harlan's quote. An admonition to other jurists, he continued saying, quote, I take leave to say that if the principles thus announced should ever receive the sanction of a majority of this court, a radical and mischievous change in our system of government will result. I then put in an open bracket of my own, kind of boxing it in, that said, I would say it's already been accomplished, end bracket. Continuing, he quoted, we will, in that event, pass from the era of constitutional liberty, guarded and protected by a written constitution, in an era of legislative absolutism. It will be an evil day for American liberty if the theory of government outside the supreme law of the land finds lodgment in our constitutional jurisprudence. No higher duty rests upon this court than to exert its full authority to prevent all violation of the principles of the Constitution. Downs v. Bidwell, 182 U.S. 244. Continuing. Is this a reminder to all judiciary for the United States of America? At 215 U.S. Code, Title 28, Judiciary and Judicial Procedure, Chapter 176, Section 3002, open bracket 15, close bracket, open bracket A, B, and C, close bracket. Think Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, quoting CAFA versus United States, 152 U.S., quote, the laws of Congress in respect to those matters do not extend into the territorial limits of the states, but have force only in the District of Columbia and other places that are within the exclusive jurisdiction of the national government, end quote. Have judges spoken in the past about this question of jurisdiction? Quote, once jurisdiction is challenged, the court cannot proceed when it clearly appears that the court lacks jurisdiction. The court has no authority to reach merits, but rather should dismiss the action. Mello v. U.S., 505 F. 2nd, 1026. The law requires proof of jurisdiction to appear on the record of the administrative agency and all administrative proceedings. Hagans v. Levine, 415 U.S., 533. A judgment rendered by a court without personal jurisdiction over the defendant is void. It is a nullity. Open bracket. A judgment shown to be void for lack of personal service on the defendant is a nullity. Close bracket. Ceramic v. Ceramic, 17 Kansas App, 2nd, 573, 576 through 77. 840, page 2nd, 553. This is a 1992 decision. The burden shifts to the court to prove jurisdiction. Rosemond v. Lambert, 469, F. 2nd, 416. Court must prove on the record all jurisdictional facts related to the jurisdiction asserted, end quote. Lantana v. Hopper, 102 F. 2nd, 188. Chicago v. New York, 37 F. Sup, 150. Once challenged, jurisdiction cannot be assumed. It must be proved to exist. Stuck v. Medical Examiners, 94 C.A., 2nd, 751, 211, Pete, 2nd, 389. Jurisdiction, once challenged, cannot be assumed and must be decided. Maine v. Thibodeau, 100 S. Court, 250. And most importantly, a court has no jurisdiction to determine its own jurisdiction. For a basic issue in any case before a tribunal is its power to act. and a court must have the authority to decide that question in the first instance, end quote. Rescue Army versus Municipal Court of Los Angeles, 171 P2, 8, 331 U.S. 549, 91 L. Ed. 1666, 67, South Court, 1409. Well, then what are the remedies for the American people who are entrapped in this legal quagmire? Case precedent remedies. U.S. Supreme Court held that state officials acting by color of law may be held personally liable for the injuries or torts they cause, and that official or sovereign immunity may not be asserted, end quote. Shore v. Rhodes, 416 U.S. 232. It's a 1974 case, also 94 South Court, 1683, 1687, the same year. Quote, when a state officer acts under a state law in a manner violative of the federal Constitution, he comes into conflict with the superior authority of that Constitution, and he is, in that case, stripped of his official or representative character and is subjected in his person to the consequence of his individual conduct. The state has no power to impart to him any immunity from responsibility to the supreme authority of the United States. Warnock v. Pecos County, Texas, 160 F. 3rd, 776. This is a 1997 case. I believe this all boils down to when one understands who truly holds the political power in our nation. Quote, it is the manner of enforcement which gives Title 42, 1983, its unique importance, for enforcement is placed in the hands of the people. Each citizen acts as a private attorney general who takes on the mantle of the sovereign, guarding for all of us the individual liberties enunciated in the Constitution. Frankenhauser versus Rizzo, 59 FRD, which is a 1973 decision. Next section is the prayer. Prayer. Therefore, justice demands that parties in a cause asserting jurisdiction, having been established upon challenge, prove up their claim in a separate hearing evidenced by authenticated evidence with testimony from a competent fact witness, one having firsthand knowledge to this challenged jurisdiction. Let it be known by all. This defendant in error vehemently objects that any ignorance of this claim remain unchallenged. Defendant in error objects to any further proceedings until the prosecutor produces evidence contrary to this defendant in error's jurisdictional claims. Furthermore, defendant in error demands the prosecutor's claims be dismissed and the defendant in error be awarded costs of suit and court costs. Respectfully submitted, and then you go into the rest of it, and then you close, of course, with a certificate of service, and that's the end of that. So, there we are. That is what I propose to be a new tool in the arsenal. It's not yet ready to be used. It hasn't been approved by the committee, the team yet, but I think that in some form this is going to cover about 90% of what they're going to say, and I know that GW and John and Bernie and a few others, Chris Ann, will add their 2 cents and 3 cents into it, so we'll see how that goes from there. Well, you all know the way it plays here. You press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. You press star 2. Those of you on Freedom's Radio, you simply look to the center right of the monitor that you're looking at, and you'll see a silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. Left-click inside of that rectangle, type away your comment or your question. Then underneath, you'll see a place to put your name and little few other bits of information, hit submit, and it'll pop up on my end, at which time I will be happy to give voice to your comment or your question. So we'll start off with Brent, followed by Ed. Let me unmute you first. Go ahead, Brent. Be nice to me. Brent?
Yes, I'm here. I actually had another call coming right at the same time, so bad timing.
Well, do you want me to go to Ed and come back for you?
No, this is good. I hung up on the other person.
How rude.
So, fantastic intro. Whatever you call it. Briefing tonight. The 1992 case that you cited that said that state officials are subject to the federal limitations of the Constitution and whatnot, I think that's extremely critical because just from my uneducated perspective, it seems that the jurisdictional issue we're claiming protections under the U.S. Constitution under the federal jurisdiction, and yet we're in a state jurisdiction and in a state court. Could you speak to that just a little bit more?
Sure. The federal Constitution, with regards to its authority over everything, it's the law of the land. Is established by an agreement that the creators of this federal constitution, which is directly the states, it's not we the people, it's the states that created the federal constitution. And nothing in the states' constitution, and when I say the states, I'm referring to the union states, nothing in their constitutions can be in controversy with the federal constitution. So anything that you see at the federal level of the Constitution, Bill of Rights, etc., you will find within the state constitution. Just remember when you go looking that if you're talking about one of the union states, you're going to go to the constitution for that union state prior to it becoming the state of whatever the state is, and you're going to look at the session laws of that state, which are the actual duly promulgated laws that have full force and effect, as opposed to statutes. The statutes are merely the appearance of law. And of course, the state runs roughshod over the appearance as though that means something. When you go back to the founding documents, that statute was the supposedly boiled down essence. It can often mean something quite opposite. So it's the session laws, it's the legislative remarks that put that statute in place that are your actual laws to operate through. Remember that Arizona is a union state. The state of Arizona, well, if it's using a zip code, it's definitely a territory of the United States. And as a territory of the United States, it is strictly the second definition of the United States, where the land and the people are subject to the United States. And the third definition is what union state citizens are affecting, which are land and the people who are protected by the federal constitution, which should find its same identical reference within the state constitutions. Does that help you?
Yeah. So when you're talking to a court, let's say you mentioned a superior court of a particular state in a particular county, that court is, I'm assuming, they don't have jurisdiction because they're not a union state court. They're a state of court. Is that correct?
Well, whether they're a state of court or a union state, whether they're a territorial court or a union state court, At this level, it doesn't matter. Remember this. This is key to everything. The one that asserts, and this is, by the way, why we keep our mouths shut, the one that asserts the jurisdiction over us is the one upon challenge that must evidence that assertion. So if you have someone that, say, they're carrying their firearms, they've got a battle rifle in the back seat wrapped in a towel, they got a pound of marijuana or whatever in the trunk of the car. Those are malum prohibita laws that are territorial or municipal laws and have no effect on an American national. So when the state comes against you, they're asserting that you're on part of a municipal plan, or you're on a territorial land in the process, and that you're a territorial person, say under the 14th Amendment, and you have to do exactly what they tell you to do with getting permission and all that other happy horse manure. They've made that assertion. So now we've come back in this, or not we, it's myself at the moment, until John and everybody else chimes in. I'm sitting there saying that we're challenging that assertion. We're showing the government all the different court cases that say once it's challenged, you've got to stop and address this. And, oh, by the way, you can't address it. It has to be a court that deals with jurisdictional question. Okay?
Yeah, that's powerful.
I hope
all right,
so.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. All right. Brother Ed.
Hey.
How you doing?
We're all right. First of all, I came in a little bit late. Were you reading that from somewhere, or...
Right. I've been thinking about this for the last 2 weeks, and today I had the opportunity to sit down and knock it out.
Okay.
I put it down on paper. And
okay.
This what I read you is just my first version of it. I've got corrections still to make and things to add and so forth. I don't think I'll take anything away. Huh?
And then you'll pass it around?
Well, I've already passed it on to John first, and
okay.
I want him to review it and go from there.
I'd be interested.
This is a good month away from being made available to the students, but just like a W-8 Ben is made available to all the people who go through the status correction process, this will be a part of that package. And it will be done in such a way that you'll keep it with you as you would other material like your affidavit. So when you are pulled over with your blue light special, the cop's going to write you a ticket, then say, "Your officer, before you continue, I'd like for you to read this, please." This will be filed with the courts prior to my first hearing. This is what the prosecutor and the judge will see first. And you'll also be a party to this, but you'll be the first party to it. John is getting closer to, in fact, he has two students right now that, and one of them, I see one of them is on the call tonight, that he's moving forward writing a civil complaint. I don't think he's doing the criminal complaint yet. Doing a civil complaint against the law enforcement officer that pulled somebody over.
Yeah.
So that's, I want to include that in the package, and I'm going to say to the officer on the side of the road, look, I'm not your enemy, and I don't know, it doesn't matter how you've been trained to think about people. I understand you've got the dirty word that we're, quote, sovereign citizens, end quote, and that you're told that we're all bad people and potential terrorists and things like that. That's what you were taught. This is the law, and you're the first one that you're the point of the spear for the state. You're the first one that will be affected by what's on this paper. So please read it. Understand that I'm sharing this with you because I don't want you hurt in court. I want you to come out of this well. And that'll just be part of it.
Yeah, I have an incident that's happened to me just in the last 5 days. And my dog, he's a big dog, attacked another dog.
Right.
And I was standing next to my neighbor. We were having a conversation. I had put my dog in the house, and he's used to following me around. I know I closed the door all the way, but he got out of it.
Right.
And he's on his way over to me. He sees my neighbor's dog, and attacked.
Yeah.
And
is that the first time?
I finally stopped the attack by falling over into a briar patch with my dog laying on top of him.
Is this the first time your dog has ever attacked another dog?
Away from home, yeah, it is. And
you attacked another dog before?
Here on my property, yes. Certain size dogs, he feels like he has to attack. And
well, there's a...
I understand that. And my so far my remedy is going. I just ordered a chain link yard for him that'll fully enclose him, and he stays there unless I'm with him. Whatever. He doesn't attack little dogs. He attacks other big dogs. Don't understand it. But at any rate.
Oh, I do. I understand that perfectly.
Oh, it's territorial.
There's no pride in whipping up on someone smaller than you. You
right.
Kind of whip up. You want somebody the same size or bigger.
Yeah. But at any rate, the cops called. I think the vet reported the incident to the police. And the guy that called me was kind of trying to bully me. And I don't blame him either. There was a gal, my neighbor's sister, actually, in the police department that got mauled by a pit bull one time. And they had to shoot the dog while it was on her. But this guy's making all these claims. He says my dog is a dangerous dog. And, yeah, he would be, but that's for a court to decide in Pennsylvania law, and not for him to decide.
Right.
But the one part of this that comes into it is, I've never vaccinated my dogs. I don't have any. They're demanding
right.
vaccination records, and I don't have vaccinations.
Good for you. Is the owner of the other dog pressing charges?
Not that it sounds. I don't think so. It doesn't sound like it. We're neighbors, and we're loving neighbors. I cut wood on his property all the time, show him what I'm doing. I get trees out of the way for him, and we're like, I have a very good reputation in the neighborhood. I just found out someone told another neighbor's son was at my chiropractor's and spoke well of me. He says he does anything for anyone. And that's how I've been a neighbor, you know, for years and years.
Yeah.
So
if the fellow that owns the dog that your dog attacked files a complaint,
yeah,
then you're talking about one person injuring another person's property vicariously through the dogs. If
right.
it's just the local municipality coming against you, then
right.
that's a malum prohibita, and if you've corrected your status, even if you haven't corrected your status, it's still a presumption that you are an American national, even if you haven't gone through it. But you better know your stuff. And let me know how that falls out. Let me know
I'm just kind of waiting to see what happens thus far.
Yeah,
but
getting the fence up is certainly a demonstration that you're doing the right thing. All right. Anything else, sir?
No, I still can't figure out the stuff that for writing my thing. My thing, I might be in a thing where my head wants to make it more difficult writing the declaration.
Declaration's less than just a page, and it's not
yeah.
rocket science. Yeah. All right. Take care.
All right. Bye.
All right, next is Nicholas from Arizona, and then there is Charlie from Oklahoma.
Hey, can you hear me?
Nicholas. Yeah, I hear you fine. Thank you.
Hey, I think I already know the answer, but I just wanted to ask, piggybacking off of my dad, if the court refuses or ignores the law or anything provided before them and decide to make their own judgments and do whatever they please, what would be, I mean, obviously there's recourse, but, like, you know, is that, I mean, it's obvious that it's hopeful that it doesn't come to that, but when it comes to that, what is the opinion or on the situation?
Well, in what I read, I said that there were case precedent. What were the case precedent remedies? And I cited two of them: Shure versus Rhode Island, Rhodes rather, and Warnock versus Pecos County, Texas. Those are the two cases that blow the lid off of the bench, the jurist, for not dealing with the case precedents that talked about the burden shifts to the court to prove jurisdiction, Roseman versus Lambert, and so many other cases that we talked about within that letter, that brief that I wrote. So I don't think it's going to be an issue. They're bound by the law, even though they're playing within the territorial jurisdiction. They're bound by the law of the land, and John's not going to let them get off that point.
Mm-hmm.
And even going to the point of suing in federal court the law enforcement officers for deprivation of rights under color of law.
Mm-hmm.
I think when they see that coming, because those files will be given judicial notice before the courts. Somehow John will get it in front of them. You know, it's your teaching material, of course, as a suggestion. But if you file it into the record, then they're going to see that you're already suing a state officer, which that crime occurred on the side of the road when they pulled you over to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Makes sense. Appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Charlie, go ahead.
Let's see. Am I unmuted? Gee.
I don't know. Can you hear me?
Yeah, there we go. Gotcha. Well, I can always hear you. But, let's see. I got on late, so I missed the front end. You were talking when I got on. And I assume GW's not on, maybe holiday. Hopefully he's not ill or something.
No, he had another appointment that he had to keep. He had a conflicting schedule.
Okay.
Schedule. And I will probably, for the benefit of these people on the call tonight, just so that you know, John is in California. He will not be back on deck until Wednesday. So I will be doing the call tomorrow night as well, and I'll probably just be repeating tonight's call. So for those of you that came in the latter part, didn't hear the first part of it, former part, come on the call. You'll hear the thing in its entirety if you decide to show up on time, Charlie. Or if you want to hear it again, you know, every time we do something and it's the same thing, it still comes out different because of
Absolutely.
The different mix of the questions that come up afterwards.
Sure. Now, I went to a few weeks ago, I'd gone to Freedom's Radio and I couldn't type anything in even if I wanted to. Same thing tonight. Are you aware of this, or is this just my computer?
I haven't gone to Freedom's Radio yet to look to see if anybody's asked a question, but I'm there now. I don't see anybody posting a question here tonight. In the past, I've seen it. It worked Saturday night with Bernie.
Okay. I think I did check Saturday night, and it, well, I don't remember. That's a few days ago. But right
now, if you If you posted something on Freedom's Radio Saturday night and it didn't get, I didn't give voice to it, I gave voice to others. So
yeah,
it's something
so
that
it
you're doing
working.
On your end. Yeah.
Now, I will say tonight, what the page shows, your page must, and I don't know if you go somewhere different to look at the questions. I mean, I just went to freedomsradio.com. If you do that, is that where you are right now?
Well, I'm going there right now to see what you're looking at.
Yeah, if you would, please.
I'm waiting for it to populate. I don't see anything here with regards to the rest of the stuff.
Exactly. I mean, what I see, it says GW, and then it says phone number to call, and it's mostly blank.
It's blank.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I'm taking a screenshot. And I'm thank you for bringing this to my attention.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
I am sending this to one of the two programmers.
Okay. I also thought of you today when I listened to a program as kind of an Independence Day flavor. and it was, it's an attorney in Oklahoma City who is very, very much a patriot and defends those sort of cases. Anyway, he was mentioned, among the things he mentioned was a speech that John F. Kennedy had given in 1946. And I thought, well, I imagine Michael probably has that. I don't know. But
Repeat. What was that again?
Okay. It was a speech of John F. Kennedy in 1946, as he was running for Senate. I know I can get the link to the program. I just know it was really made me think of the things you guys are teaching. You know, I mean, he was obviously on it, but so I just thought that might be a if you weren't aware of the speech, it might be some
forward it to me, will you?
Yeah, I don't have the speech, but I have the link, and I'll send you the link to the program.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Appreciate
that. So, okay.
Thank you, sir.
Absolutely.
Anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you very much.
All right. My pleasure. Thank you. Again, press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen. Press star 2. No sense in saying to the people over at Freedom's Radio to log in on that good stuff because that part of the website is not up. And I don't know why, but we're going to find out by tomorrow, promises. If we're not going to have any more questions on the call side of it tonight, then we're going to say goodnight and go night-night. We'll be back. I will be back again tomorrow night. We will be redoing this call live tomorrow night so that if you missed the first portion of it, we'll cover it again. If you'd like to hear it all over again, we'll be doing it all over again. Again, press star 2 on your keypad. Otherwise, we're going to go ahead and shut her down. Going once. Twice. Well, thank you all. Have a great 4th tomorrow. I'll still be here tomorrow night. Until then, good night, everyone.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.